I would like now to welcome Charles Maynard. Charles Maynard is on the news department at KSFR, longtime member of that wonderful news department, and he is a physician, and he's also author of a new book called Thriving Through Devastating Illness. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. How are you?
It's, you know, we have the common cold here. That is our only medical complaint of the day. But we are offering this book of yours, which is a wonderful book, during the KSFR Fund Drive, which is happening now. People can call 428-1393 and get a copy of the book. Which is really worth reading because you have written this from, as you put it in your own words, both sides of the stethoscope. You are both a doctor and a patient. What prompted you to write this book?
It was that experience of going through severe illnesses and being a physician and realizing how difficult it is to work through the system and deal with families and things when you have a serious illness. So I saw a lot of books on battling cancer or surviving this disease or that disease. I didn't want to battle or survive. I just wanted to go on with life.
Right.
And that was the secret.
And so that was a really interesting theme because whereas other people used war metaphors, you not only just went on with your life and got treatment and talked about both getting treatment and denial, which is part of the process. But you also describe other people's journeys. One of the things that really struck me was two people with pancreatic cancer. One of them got every treatment in the book and died. One of them said, you know, I'm not going to get treated. And years later, he was thriving.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
It was amazing. Two women, and they actually came in the same week to the office, and both wound up with the same diagnosis. One said, I want to know everything about it, and I want to do everything that can be done, and whatever it takes. And the other one said, you know what? I've had a nice life. I'm just going to keep living. And the first one lasted a few months, and the second woman was still alive years later when I left that town.
Amazing.
Well, I think the attitude is what makes all the difference, and we know it stimulates your immune system.
Right, and it's very tricky business because there's a lot of stuff about that, about attitude and spirituality and things like that, which really don't have a place inside the medical paradigm.
No, and they should. It tries to creep in, but it really doesn't exist, particularly in today's hospitals, which I'm not terribly fond of.
428-1393 is the number for the KSFR Pledge Drive, and we would like to get the phones ringing and sell out every single copy of Charles's book that he has so kindly and generously donated to us during this fund drive, and during today only, by the way. In fact, during this morning only, because in the afternoon at 5 o'clock, we're doing something else. So this hour is your one chance to get a copy of this book, Thriving Through Devastating Illness.
And I'll be happy to sign it to whoever gets it. Be my pleasure.
Excellent. So you became a doctor, and as you said in your book, which I found really amusing, that your medical school was paid for by a wealthy uncle.
Yes.
Uncle Sam.
Yes, he managed to foot the whole bill, bless his heart, or I don't think I could have gone.
But the way you paid Uncle Sam back was, what was it? You had to do community service.
I had to go to an underserved area for a number of years, equaling the number of years that I was supported. So I wound up going to a small town in southwestern New Mexico. I was not only the only physician in town, but in the entire county of 10,000 people.
Wow.
And it was an experience.
So when you were there, you had to do basically everything from stitching up little wounds to delivering babies to...
You name it.
Treating diabetes.
And major traffic accidents and hunting dogs that got shot and a little bit of everything. It was a great learning experience, but I don't need to do it again.
When you say hunting dogs, what do you mean?
Well, they get in front of their owner, who maybe was having a little beer as he was doing his turkey hunting, and the dog would get shot, so we'd have to operate on the dog.
Being the local physician.
Correct. They didn't exactly distinguish between vet and physician, dentist. They were all the same.
Well, you know, I have to say, I have said this many times, if I ever got sick, I would like to go to Smith Veterinary Hospital, because the care that they give there is fantastic.
It's outstanding. It really is very good.
In any case, 428-1393 is the number, and we'd like to get the phones ringing, and we would like to raise $1,000 for the station today, for KSFR. 428-1393. We're going to just break for a second to talk about the station. You are a longtime member of KSFR as a staff member or news volunteer.
I am. I'm in the news department, and I've changed my duties and advanced in what my responsibilities are over the years, and I love every minute of it. It's a lot of fun, but the fact is we have to pay the light bill and the phone bill and all those other bills every month, so we have to come not do our news job for a while and do this so that we can get the funds we need to bring you the radio that you asked to hear.
428-1393, 428-1393 is the number, and if you like this show, I was just thinking, I get a lot of people who listen to the show who either come up to me or write and tell me that they listen every day, and I would like to ask those people who listen often to the Radio Cafe, to support the Radio Cafe. It's really, it's a pretty simple math equation. You use something, you contribute toward it. If you go to a store and buy an apple, you put up your, what do apples cost? Two something a pound to buy the apples. And if you use a radio station, then voluntarily we ask you to just contribute toward it. It's not a big deal. What it takes is a phone call to 428-1393 to make that call and say, you know, I want to give a dollar a day, let's say, or 50 cents a day, and then you are a contributor to KSFR and you keep the show on the air. It's very simple.
And the truth is, we are your station. We're here to play what you've asked us to play. And one way we find out what you want to hear is during these fun drives. When you call in, let us know. You're calling in during Mary Charlotte's show, that she's got a lot of fans. But let us know, because it helps us plan so that you have the programming that you want to hear.
And you can make any comments about this show, about other shows, and you can give, as we always like to remind people, you can have your name read on the air, or you can go under the name of Anonymous and not have your name read on the air, or you can dedicate your contribution in the name of whoever you want, whether it be a beloved family member, or a beloved pet, or a beloved hero. So, 428-1393, and this hour and this hour only, you can get a copy of Charles Maynard's book, Thriving Through Devastating Illness. And on the cover of the book, the word surviving is crossed out, and the word thriving is kind of like written in red pen. And so it's more than just surviving.
It is, and that to me is the secret. When you find out you have a serious illness, and I've been through cancer and a stroke and a few other things, when you find out there's some things you're going to go through, some feelings and emotions, and you need to go through them. You need to get the information you need to know what you're dealing with and what your options are and make choices. But after that, it's so much more important to not let that disease become the center of your life, and it's easy to do.
Yeah.
You can fill your days with lab appointments and doctor's appointments and therapy and reading about it and being on the internet, or you can do those things that affirm who you are.
Well, that's very interesting, because if you are, I mean, I have, you know, knock on wood, never had a devastating illness, thank goodness, but I was trying to put myself in your shoes, and we'll go to your story in a moment, but I was thinking, if I had to go through this, being a little bit obsessive, I think I might be one of those people who read every single thing there was and put it front and center until I got done with it. Because there are personality types like that, where if you have a problem, you're just like a dog with a rag until you deal with the problem. But illnesses like that aren't, you can't just like deal with it.
Well, and you'd think as a physician I'd want to do a lot of investigation and understanding, but the truth is if it's happening to me, I want to not be the doctor. I want to be me and go on with my life and let them deal with it. So
428-1393 is the number. Charles, you, when you were working in this small town, and you're a native New Mexican.
I am born and raised in Albuquerque.
And so you were in New Mexico serving your country, serving the people in a rural area, and there was no x-ray machine.
No, and it was a big problem because down there, the closest hospital was, well, the closest one you could get to was about 70 miles away. There was one about 40 miles away that was a better hospital, but it was over a mountain road that was closed most of the winter. And if a patient came in to me and say they had a possible broken arm or pneumonia, I had to bundle them up, put them in the car, send them on a car trip for an hour, which you know what you feel like when you're sick. You don't want to go for a long car ride.
Right.
Wait at the hospital for an hour, get the x-ray, come back for another hour to see me, and then see me in my office and we could deal with it. And that was just untenable. But I found out there was, next to the clinic I was in, was an old abandoned hospital from the 50s. And I learned it had an x-ray machine in it. And the county manager said, hey, if it works, you can use it. We'll pay the electricity. And I had thought about this possibility. And the last year of training, I used to spend the nights I was on call that were quiet in x-ray learning how to take my own films. So I got into the hospital, found the machine, turned it on. Lo and behold, it worked. And for 3 years, every day I was in there for several hours taking and developing x-rays.
And it was the old style of x-ray where you take a picture and you develop the film in chemicals and all that.
In a dip tank that you have to hold it for a certain amount of time, and that varied with the temperature, and it was an ancient art. But the problem was I never had the machine checked or calibrated, and it turns out the entire time it was leaking radiation. So for 3 years I was radiating myself without knowing it.
And the result of that was not a happy result.
No, it knocked out my immune system, which was the end of practicing medicine. It's led to the cancers that I've dealt with, probably contributed to the stroke, which was severe. So it has not been a lot of fun.
So you then became suddenly a patient after having been a robust young man who never really thought about your own mortality, even as you were dealing with everybody else's.
Oh, that's so true. You feel bulletproof. But all of a sudden, I was in a rather unique position at a unique time in our history because, as you know, our medical system is rapidly undergoing change, not necessarily for the better. And I kind of had a front row seat for it as a patient, and I had started to see the change as a physician. So I was able to witness what's happened from both sides.
And you suddenly had to deal with the fact that you had a devastating illness, and you did. I mean, it was such an interesting book to me. We're talking about Charles Maynard's book, Thriving Through Devastating Illness, because all the things that you might have counseled patients against, or some of the things, you were doing yourself, like just kind of going into denial.
Absolutely. Doctors are the worst patients. It's no secret.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. We think we know it all, and you can't tell us anything, and we can't make mistakes. So we get in trouble all the time.
So how did that play out for you?
I had to get through that, and I had to say, I am not the physician here. I am the patient. And what's worked for me is I actually will tell my doctors, you handle this. If there's anything I need to decide or worry about, you tell me. Otherwise, I'm leaving you to deal with it. And I do what they say, but then I go on with working at the radio and doing the other activities that I love.
Now, you did find yourself in the position of having to stop practicing medicine.
Yes, I did. And I will tell you the truth. At the time, medicine had become absolutely no fun. Everybody was mad at everybody all the time. The receptionist was mad at the patient because the patient was yelling at them. The patient was mad because they couldn't get an appointment. The doctors were mad because they were being asked to see too many patients at a time. The nurses were in tears because it was all falling on them. And quitting was almost a relief. And I have not met a doctor yet who asked what happened to me. And I said I retired, that didn't say I'd give anything to get out of it.
Very, very interesting. We're talking to Charles Maynard about his book, Thriving Through Devastating Illness, and that book can be yours if you give a call to us right now at 428-1393. If this is the kind of programming that you like and you listen to, we ask you to make a call and support this radio station and support this show specifically, because we can't actually do it. We're listener-supported public radio. We can't do it without listener support. I know that many of our listeners have already made their contribution through that letter that they got, and lots of our people who've already contributed have gotten a letter and responded to it. Some of you have responded online. Thank you. If that is the case, then great. But if you haven't called this fund drive, or if you haven't made a contribution in a while, or if you've never made a contribution to this show, please give a call right now. The phones have not been ringing during my show this morning, and I hate to take it personally, but, you know, you do wonder. It's sort of like, I just watched that The Great Gatsby the other day, the Leonardo DiCaprio version, and you know, he gives all these fabulous parties, and then when he dies, nobody shows up. And you start to feel like that after a while. You know, you work your butt off every single day, and then when you just ask for a little something in return, you wish you
the people you had. Well, I know this show has a lot of fans because I know most of my friends that I talk to listen regularly. If you have already given your pledge and you're a fan of this show, call your friends, ask them if they've given a pledge, and if not, tell them how easy it is and send them our way.
And the ease can be represented by the following seven numbers: 428-1393, 428-1393, or if you're calling out of area and you have a landline, the number is 866. That's a toll-free number, 866-907-5737, also known as 866-907-KSFR.
Or on the web at ksfr.org, and there's a Pledge Now button you can push that walks you right through it very easily.
Exactly. So the phone is starting to ring. We like that. Let's keep it ringing, ringing, ringing. For a modest contribution, you can get a copy of Charles Maynard's wonderful book, Surviving and Thriving Through Devastating Illness. Like I said before, the surviving is crossed out in red Sharpie, and they wrote it in Thriving. And it's a book for doctors, patients, and family members. And as you say, when somebody gets sick, it's not just the person who's sick. It's their entire family and often friends who are really affected by it.
You know, it's like any other major event in our life. It doesn't ever just affect us. We have our family and those close around us. And an illness is, of course, particularly a major illness, is it impacts the entire family, from the kids, the dog, on up. And it's really important to pay attention to them and make sure that they're getting the care that they need during this time, and that you have good open communication with them.
What in particular should people be aware of when a family member is sick in terms of young children? What do they need?
You know, that's a very tough question, because some children are a little smarter, a little farther down the road, and they want to know what's going on. Some children aren't going to understand it, so you really have to play it close by ear. Older children, however, you don't assume they don't know what's going on, because they do.
Yeah.
And they need to know what's going on, and you don't have to scare them, but tell them the truth.
What do you mean by older?
Oh, 8, 9, 10 years old. They're very, I mean, everyone in the household's aware something's wrong, but the kids that are a little older understand something major is going on here.
Yeah.
And the family I grew up in had the rule you don't talk about it. And so we never knew when somebody in the family was sick or having money trouble or anything else, but that's not healthy.
It's interesting, too, because I think a lot of the time when, even when there's not an illness, but parents are having conflicts and they're kind of fighting behind closed doors quietly and the children don't actually hear it, they still know something is going on, and it makes them kind of crazy if they don't get told, you know, there's a little problem in the house and we're trying to deal with it or whatever, as opposed to everything's fine, dear. Because they know that's not true, and it just turns into some kind of cognitive dissonance that when they're adults, they spend thousands in therapy trying to deal with.
Absolutely. It's better to say, we're having a little problem, but everything's going to be okay. So they understand that this is not an end deal.
428-1393. We're just about one-tenth of the way to our $1,000 goal for this hour. We gotta...
Oh, folks, need to pick up the phone and make it ring, please.
Yes. We would like to just modestly ask for a $1,000 contribution, which means 20 $50 contributions. So let's get 20 callers during this hour. If you can pledge 100, so much the better. If you can pledge 10 bucks a month, that is ideal, because those sustaining memberships help us tremendously. 428-1393.
I think that's the best deal, the sustaining membership, because you want to give the station $120. Everybody can't come up with that at once. It's very difficult sometimes. $10 a month, that's two cups of coffee.
Right. Yeah, coffee these days. When I was a kid, coffee cost 50 cents.
Yeah, I remember quarter, so.
Yeah, right. So, we're talking to Charles Maynard, and so you were diagnosed with thyroid cancer, and this is your story about that was another interesting story about the medical system today, which is that three different doctors told you three entirely different things about what you had, how extensive it was, and how serious it was.
It was very confusing, because my primary doctor said, you have thyroid cancer, there's no question. One endocrinologist says, I don't know, you came in too early, I can't tell. Another doctor, the cancer doctor, said, no, you don't have it. Finally, the surgeon said, I believe your primary, let's take it out. And they took it out and sent it to the lab, and the lab couldn't figure out, they knew something was wrong, so they sent it to a second hospital that came up with the diagnosis. But we then sent it to MD Anderson, they came up with a third diagnosis on the same tissue.
And you're going bananas, because you think, where's the science here?
Well, studying medicine, you learn that it is a whole lot more art than science. We would like it to be more science, but the truth is, it'll always be an art.
What do you mean by that? Let's talk about medicine as an art.
Well, relying on cold facts and numbers and dosages and stimulus response just doesn't work. I used to try with every patient that I'd see to decide what kind of doctor that patient wanted. Some want the old-fashioned family doc. Some want the new hotshot university guy. Some want the laid-back guy. And I tried to play that kind of doctor so that they felt more comfortable communicating with me. Because really, all the tests in the world are great and all the scans and all the diagnostic work we do, but we really learn what's wrong with somebody when you sit down face to face and talk to them.
Which I think is a very, very important thing in an era where we're talking about doing medicine via iPad.
Yeah, and it's getting controversial for that very reason. I'll never forget my grandmother, shortly before she died, was in her 80s, very outspoken, living in a nursing home, and the doctor made us bring her to his office for a visit. So we took her there, and he did his usual, walked in the room, did a cursory exam, started to leave, and my grandmother slapped her cane on the door and said, "You take a chair and sit down. You can leave when I'm finished asking you what I need to know." And that's really, that should never have to happen. We should automatically do that.
Very interesting. Now, you have had cases where there's one case in particular of an old woman who was one of your patients, and one day you saw her, and she had dressed herself to the nines.
She was in we had in this little town, it was technically a nursing home, but they had several levels, and one of them was like assisted living apartments, and that's where she lived. And I used to check everybody every month, and they'd bring them into the exam room I had there on the facility, and I'd talk to them, examine them. Well, one day, she's totally dressed up. She's got on a new dress, a hat, a big smile, and I said, "What's going on?" And she said, "Oh, you never see me again." And I said, "Well, what do you mean I'll never see you again?" And she said, "Oh, I've decided to die." Well, I dove right into the chart looking to see what I'd miss on the test, or did I order the wrong medicine, or
did she say decided?
Yes, she said, "I decided to die." And
but not to take pills.
Right.
Just to sort of...
Yeah, she said, "I've had a nice life. I miss my husband, and it's just time for me to go." Well, I thought she was nuts. Of course, I'm a young doctor. I haven't learned much yet. And about 4 days later, they call me at night from the nursing home to say she'd passed on. And I went to the nursing home to pronounce her, and she was laying there in the bed with the most gorgeous smile I've ever seen.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was an incredible lesson.
What was the lesson for you?
Well, I think we have more control over our destiny than we admit. I've had situations where other doctors or myself have whispered to a patient it's okay to let go, and it's amazing how often shortly after that they'll let go and they'll die. And I think we have the ability to do that if we want to.
We're talking to Charles Maynard about his book, Thriving Through Devastating Illness, which, by the way, can be yours for a contribution to KSFR. If you call right now, 428-1393, 428-1393, and make a contribution. We're just about, almost 20% of the way to our $1,000 goal for this hour. So please help us out. It would be sad if I felt that my listeners weren't listening or weren't contributing today. So please give a call, 428-1393, and get a copy of this book, or just simply get the satisfaction of having donated to this really marvelous and, I have to say, thriving through all kinds of situations kind of radio station.
That is true.
There is a funny, not quite parallel, but we have been surviving and thriving through the first 10 years of our existence, and I really think we're actually stronger than ever before.
I do too. It's been one day at a time, but I know you have a lot of devoted listeners, and folks, if you haven't called, now's the time. It's just human nature to say, "You know what, I am going to do that in a couple days when I remember." Just do it now,
yeah,
and take care of it, and there you go.
428-1393, and I'll give that number one more time so that people can get their pencils in hand, or pens, or Sharpies, or hammer and chisel. 428-1393. So, you have a chapter in this book about your own spirituality. And it's interesting because I think there are more than you would think. There's a lot of scientific and medical people, doctors and researchers and so on, who have a very strong and active spiritual life, even though it's a completely different paradigm than what they practice as doctors.
Which, it's too bad. It is a completely different paradigm. I know for me, the more I learned about the human body and how it works, and the more detail I got into, the more you realize this isn't an accident. This is an incredible feat of engineering. If you just look, just the operation of the cell is so fascinating and so intelligent and beyond anything I could ever think of to put together. And I think that happens to a lot of us. The more we study and learn, the more we say, wait a minute, there's more. And then you learn it in practice with things like the woman I told you about that said I decided to die. You get daily lessons in it if you keep your eyes open.
So what is your own spiritual practice?
Well, I am a Methodist. I've been a Presbyterian in the past. But I keep a very firm grasp on the fact that I think religion is a man-made construct. And we have to realize that, and it's as such, it's imperfect, and it always will be. The God or the leader of the universe, or her, whatever you want to call her, is a spiritual reality, but that is separate from religion. And I think people keep those, I don't know, for me it works to realize that my religion is not the same thing.
You have a kind of, I mean, the book has so much humor in it, and one of the things that I thought was funny was when you were going to different churches and describing what it was actually like there, and one of them basically said that you are failing God if you don't give lots of money to the church every week.
Yeah, that happened, and it was, of course, I left over that. I wasn't going to tolerate that. I have to admit freely that there are more than two churches in Santa Fe I've walked out of in the middle of and will never go back because I can't tolerate the imperfection. There's some imperfections I can live with great and some I just can't.
Well, because, I mean, that gets into one of the seven deadlies.
That's right. That's right, or all of them. I don't know.
428-1393 is the number here, and the phone has been ringing. We would like to keep that momentum up to get to our $1,000 goal by the end of this hour. 428-1393. So how did your spiritual practice, your religion, your Methodism?
Yes.
Help you, if it did, during cancer and stroke and spinal surgeries and knee surgeries? I don't know how you're sitting before us, Charles. I mean, you have survived so much. It's just unbelievable.
I'll just as an example give the stroke. I woke up one morning and could only speak gibberish and could barely walk. And had a major stroke, wiped out a quarter of my brain, basically. And was not doing well. They didn't think I was going to survive out of the emergency room. But
I mean, people were saying, "Oh, you know, have your wife call your friends,
yeah,
if they ever want to see you again."
That's right. This is going to be the last chance. And at one point, they decided to do a spinal tap, and you know, those ER rooms are small. Well, it was packed with doctors and technicians and students who had never seen it before, and the regular nursing traffic in and out. It was loud. All the lights were on. I couldn't tell, you know, what time of day it was, and I felt like I was in the way and everybody else needed to be there. And all of a sudden, I heard this voice that said, "Just close your eyes for 3 seconds, Chuck, and then open it." And I don't know where it came from, but I did it, and I opened them, and I was in, 14 hours later, in a quiet, dark room, my wife sitting at the door keeping an eye on me, and I had made it through the ER, so.
And got into a coma.
Yes, I had sure enough, which of course scared people even more. But I was only out of work for 2 weeks. I was back on the air. I wasn't great, but I was back on the air.
Which is unbelievable because, I mean, you described this, and I guess you had to ask, I mean, some of this must have come from asking other people because it's hard for you to remember this. I mean, people would say, what's your name? And you'd say, Fishtail Coffee Cup Sidewalk.
Right. It was just gibberish would come out, and I'd know it wasn't what I was trying to say. But the funny thing was, I never was scared. Even though I make my living through the radio, and this is how I spend my time, and it's my love, I was never scared through all that. And I can blame it on my brain being swollen, or I can blame it on the fact that I felt I was being cared for by a force that was not ready to take me yet.
Very interesting. And that was what you kind of intuitively felt, like my time here is not over?
Yes. And I talked to another woman who had a much worse stroke than I did, who went through the same thing. And she suddenly had the feeling, she said, that it was not time. She thought it was time to go over, but she got the overwhelming feeling it's not. And she's still with us today.
The whole idea of fear, the whole experience of fear, is something that I think is beyond our control. I mean, you didn't say, Chuck, don't be scared. You just weren't. And then some people just are.
Right. And I don't know about you, but one thing I can't do is tell myself not to be afraid, because if I'm afraid, I'm afraid.
No kidding.
And the best thing to do isn't to pretend like you're not, it's to admit it to yourself and then still do what you need to do.
428-1393 is the number. We're still waiting for contributions, and some of them have been coming in, and we're very grateful for them, and we're waiting for your contribution. Each one of you out in the car, out in your offices, in your houses, to just make a little contribution, a little phone call. It's very easy and it's very quick. And once you've made a contribution, you will feel better. And we're talking about feeling better.
You will. You'll feel much better. You'll be surprised.
It's true. It actually is true. I've told more than once the story of the first time I ever donated to public radio. I think I was about 25 and I was living in Boston. And I was listening, and they said, we need contributions, and we mean you. I was like, oh, that means me. And I made that contribution, and I'd never been on the radio. I'd never contemplated being on the radio. And I heard my name, and the thrill that went through me, it was like a little adrenaline attack. Anyway, we want you to have that, and a happy adrenaline attack. 428-1393. And I think we have some thank yous from the control room. Oh, I thought we had some thank yous from the control room. Maybe not.
Well, fine.
Anyway, okay. We will have some thank yous in a few minutes from the control room. 428-1393. So you have gone through all of this, and it really hasn't abated. I mean, you have had one challenge after another. Did you at some point experience fear, Charles?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Several times throughout illnesses, when I had bone marrow failure and was looking at a transplant, and I was terrified. I've been scared before of potential diagnoses, but the secret is I just let myself be scared, because that's there'd be something wrong with me if I wasn't.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it is kind of, again, this book is almost, I mean, it is amusing at times, where you say, it wasn't cancer, it wasn't, you know, all these other things, it was actually the stroke that led you to think that maybe, just maybe, you weren't immortal.
That was, and embarrassingly, that's the first time it ever occurred to me that I wasn't going to live forever. And that's because I'm an eternal adolescent. I understand that.
Ah, yes, the arrested development syndrome.
Absolutely, and I love it. keeps me enjoying life.
If you, ladies and gentlemen, are an eternal adolescent, please call right now and join the club.
I know there's others out there.
428-1393. So, what do you think have been your biggest lessons that you wanted to impart to others through this book?
I think the biggest one, quite simply, is these things are going to happen. You know, the reality is that unless we get hit by a bus, we're probably going to wind up at some point, certainly with ourselves or a significant other, dealing with the devastating illness. And you have the choice between making that illness the center of your life or what fulfills you the center of your life. And as long as you check the one that fulfills you, the other you'll be able to take care of. You'll intuitively know what to do. You'll get through it. It'll end up however it's supposed to end up, and you'll be okay with it.
And I have to say, an interesting example in our own radio family has been Diego Mulligan.
Absolutely.
I really admire him very much, because when he got all kinds of devastating illnesses, he had all, I don't even know what his family was. I'm not going to talk about his illness on the air, but he had a lot of very, very serious things. And he had a kind of an operation at the VA, and a week later he was on the telephone doing radio interviews from his hospital bed.
He wasn't, and no matter, and there were times when I know he felt miserable, he came in and he did his show, and he did it well. And he kept focused on those things that meant the most to him.
Yeah.
His family, the home he was building, the world that he lives in. That was what his life was all about. He never let it be about his illness.
And when somebody, especially a colleague, and especially a colleague who does the same thing as you do, is in that position, you can't help but put yourself in those shoes and say, what would I do if I were in his shoes? And I'm pretty sure that I would order every season of South Park, watch them from beginning to end, and order medical marijuana.
And just
say, everybody get out of here.
Knowing you the way that I know you, you'd be right here doing this. Because you're as hooked on it as the rest of us.
It's so hard to say. And I guess that's the thing that is very humbling, is you don't know how you're going to respond to something until the time comes. And people who think they're going to be cowards often have a lot of strength in them, and people who think that they're going to be strong often find that that's when they get really knocked to the ground.
But the important thing is to don't lose sight of yourself, and that in the end, you as a soul are going to be okay.
What do you mean by as a soul?
Well, yeah, whatever's going to happen, and I don't know if anything happens or what happens after we leave here, but your soul's going to go on, and the good works that you've done are going to keep you alive here because you've left them here on Earth.
We're talking to Charles Maynard about the book Thriving Through Devastating Illness, and we are getting very close but have not quite achieved our goal yet. So please give a call and make a flurry of activity in the last 9 minutes of this show.
There's a flurry there now.
Oh, good. We like flurries.
We
don't like snow flurries. But we like flurries. 428-1393. And Mary Lynn is with us to tell us whom we should thank.
Right. And when you asked for me before, I was on the phone with somebody.
Oh, good.
Here's the list. Here we go. Paula James.
Yay!
Sarah Oakes.
Yay!
Pat Stark.
Thank
Yay.
You.
Margo, who loves everything about KSFR.
Oh, bless you, Margo.
Thank you, Margo.
Denise Cope.
Yay! Talk about Denise Cope, who knows more than a little bit about the subject we're talking about, because she wrote a book about death and dying that we've talked about on this show. But anyway, go ahead.
I might have written this first name wrong. I think it's Charlene Reeder, but I slaughtered Charlene. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's not nice. Jane Tokunaga.
Thank you.
And Janice Heights.
Yay.
Marion Seymour.
Thank you.
Karen Drawn.
Awesome.
Sally Bingham.
Thank you, Sally.
And there are more, I'm sure, coming, but of course there were some Anonymi in there.
Anonymous, uh-huh. We love you.
Oh, great family.
Yes, my favorite artist.
Yes, absolutely.
428-1393. We've got, what, 6-7 minutes left in the program, and seven, eight minutes left in the program, and we would love your call so we can reach our goal for this hour. By the way, I'm on today at 5 o'clock as well in the time slot of what was for so many years the Journey Home, and I'm very honored to be able to reach all of you in that hour as well, because we know there are people who aren't up at this time of day, and so keep your radios tuned all day long to KSFR because it's a terrific station. 428-1393. One thing we haven't talked about that much is people's spouses and partners. When you have a devastating illness, the first person you have to tell is your partner. And it's so hard for them because, I mean, when you have an illness, you're not in control, but they're really not in control. There's really not that much they can do except in a supportive capacity. And then sometimes it's hard to know what you should do when you're the spouse.
It is very difficult. And there's a temptation not to tell them, to spare their feelings, because people we love, we don't like to scare or hurt. But in this situation, they are going to be living through this very intricately with you. They may have to miss work, take you to appointments, do whatever, run errands that you can't run. And it's just real important that they understand what's going on and include them. Bring them to the major appointment so that they can also hear. It doesn't hurt to have a second set of ears in the room anyway.
Because they'll remember things that you don't remember.
Absolutely. And the other warning I have, and this happens more often than you realize, is the spouses will tend to ignore an illness they have that's serious.
Right.
And you've got to take care of yourself because you just need to. And you need to speak up. There's always the feeling of, oh, but this is not as bad as what you're going through. Well, that's irrelevant. If something's wrong, you need to get it dealt with. And so don't forget about yourself.
Which is very important thing, because if one person has cancer and then their spouse has some other kind of thing, like, you know, an illness that could really get worse if you don't treat it, you better treat that too. And the person who's sick has a responsibility to say, my dear sweetie, go to the doctor.
Absolutely. It's just a must. And we know how many people in this country die within a year of their spouse. And I think part of it is from ignoring their own health while a spouse is ill.
428-1393 is the number. Now, through all of the things that, all of the challenges, health challenges that you have had, Charles, and you came in here holding a cane or a walking stick because last week you broke 3 ribs.
Yes. Nobody's ever accused me of coordination.
Through all of this, not only have you been on the radio, written plays, starred in plays, you did a wonderful one-man show about being a country doctor, which is part of the experience that we've talked about this hour. You have also gotten another book contract.
I do, and it happens to be about the experiences, the humorous side of living in the small town, because it really did have a lot of... It was never boring. Let's just say that. Everything in the one-man show is true, and my wife has urged me for years to put it on paper, and I'm going to do it, and got the contract yesterday.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I think there were some of those things in the one-man show, which included things like people shooting their own dogs by mistake, and which is so horrible. I mean, dogs being... I mean, if there is a godly creature that ever lived, it's a dog.
That's true, and the look they give you, like, don't don't let him take me back home.
Oh.
Please.
Oh, goodness.
But, you know, we love him. My Yorkie is my constant companion, so.
428-1393 is the number. And we're just about 2 minutes away from the end of the hour. So we want to thank all the people. I think the numbers are still coming in and the thank yous are still coming in. I think we may have reached our goal for the hour. And so we just want to thank all the people who are listening and who listen to this show regularly, who listen to this station regularly. Because this is a time when, ladies and gentlemen, we get to actually talk to each other and communicate. And I try to do that through Facebook, although me and social media are not exactly best friends, but we do our best to try to put things up there and let people know and how they can really have their voices heard, too. It's a tremendous privilege to have a voice on the radio. And for listeners, it's really nice to know that you are listened to. So everybody who writes to me, I try to write back to them. And if you have comments on the show or if you want to call the station now and not only make a contribution, but really just talk about what you think about the station, 428-1393 is the number. And I'm wondering if we have any more thank yous.
A couple here. Kirsten St. Clair.
Yay!
And MJ Conley.
Oh, thank you. Thank all of you.
Guess what?
What? Anonymous?
Well, yeah, there's always anonymous. There were several of those.
Okay.
Thank them all. We thank them all. But you know what, Mary Charlotte?
What?
Not only did you make the goal,
yes,
but you made over 50% more than your goal.
Wow, thank you.
And they're still on the phone.
Awesomeness, totality, thank you. And we're going on for the rest of the week. So we're here Monday through Friday. Today is Tuesday. I'm here in the morning and afternoon, both throughout the week. And happy to be on the radio, happy to have these wonderful listeners and this wonderful opportunity to bring you good radio every day, or what I hope is good radio every day. And once again, you can still get a copy of Charles Maynard's book, Thriving Through Devastating Illness. And Charles, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Mary Charlotte, thank you for having me, and thanks to all of you out there who donated. You're the best in the world.
Yes, and for those of you who haven't, you still can. 428-1393. And Mary Lynn LeBlanc, thank you, and thank our volunteers. And it's just about time to go, so hasta la vista, baby. Ciao.